welcome to Tea and Strumpets, a Regency romance review. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Kelsey.
And today I wanted to bring a piece of news that I found in the romance world. First, it's involved with a new release or an upcoming release that didn't make it onto our like anticipated release list this year because it was just announced. I don't believe this author has spoken about it before like this month, but it's from one of my very favorite authors. It's from Courtney Milan. So she has a new book coming out. Not the book that was like maybe going to come out in February, but a different one.
Ooh, that's exciting.
And I'm really excited about this book. And so I wanted to share it with everyone. If you haven't already heard, it comes out on September 22nd. So that's like a week and a half after this episode airs. So like
very soon.
It's super relevant. And it's called The Duke Who Didn't. And the cover features two Asian models. So I'm very excited. And when I read the synopsis, the main character, her name is Chloe Fong. And definitely, you know, from that name, I was like, oh, she's of Asian descent. And then, you know, the Duke's name is Jeremy Wentworth. So I thought, well, this is interesting because, again, there's a male Asian model on the cover. So I'm super intrigued. I know Courtney is going to do a brilliant job with this story. And it's really cute. So I'm going to read a little snippet of the synopsis for us so we can get excited about it.
All right. Tell me more. Tell me more.
Miss Chloe Fong has plans for her life, lists for her days, and absolutely no time for nonsense. 3 years ago, she told her childhood sweetheart that he could talk to her once he planned to be serious. He disappeared that very night. Except now he's back. Jeremy Wentworth, the Duke of Lansing, has returned to the tiny village he once visited with the hope of wooing Chloe. In his defense, it took him years of attempting to be serious to realize that the endeavor was incompatible with his personality. All he has to do is convince Chloe to make room for a mischievous trickster in her life, and then disclose that in all the years that they've known each other, he's failed to mention his real name, his title, and the minor fact that he owns her entire village. Only one thing can go wrong. Everything.
I love it. I'm really into it.
I know, right? I was like, it's just everything I love from Courtney Milan. Like, the characters already are flying off the synopsis.
I love it because he's like, yeah, I know you want me to be a serious guy, but like, that's not who I am. So you just gotta like accept who I am at my core. I love it.
Opposites attract. I love opposites attract. So super
cute. That one's always a good one.
Yeah, and she also had an update on The Devil Comes Courting, which was another book that we were really excited about reading, which also featured a Chinese heroine or a half-Chinese heroine. But basically, she has an update on her website, so I recommend you go there if you want to hear the full thing. But she's kind of just reorganized her website, taken some things down. She had structured the entire Worth Saga series on her website, and basically she said like that was actually kind of slowing her down, impeding her, making her feel guilty for not having things yet. And so she is working on The Devil Comes Courting. And according to this update, she is hoping to have a release date announced by the end of September, but she's still not sure about that. So, you know, we've got one book coming out right now.
And I think this is great. And I think that one thing as readers that, you know, just like we are all in our millennial and maybe not millennial brains, but we're all very much like constant consumers of content and we need like the next thing now. We're not very good at waiting. But honestly, one thing I've always liked about books is like you get to the end of a series that and you're like, oh, but there's another one. I just have to wait for it. And then you kind of forget about it. And then suddenly it like comes upon. You're like, oh, look at this magical thing that I had forgotten I was waiting for.
And you get to fall in love with it all over again.
Exactly. And I think that's part of the joy of being a bookworm. Like, you have to wait for it. You know, you get caught up and then you have to wait for the next thing. And in between, you can go look for next thing. Because I will say, I experienced this joy when I was looking at, like, Kindle sent me a thing about like Amazon reads to look forward to this month or something like that. And then it was like Evie Dunmore's new book. And I was like, oh, I had completely forgotten. Of course that's coming out. Like, yes, now I know what I'm going to be reading. Now it's just something I got to look forward to.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is. I totally agree. You know, and I feel like with romance, we're so spoiled because we do get so much more volume of books and generally a lot quicker than many other genres. For example, fantasy. I've been waiting for the third book in my very, very favorite fantasy series for many years now. Like, I think it's approaching... the first book was written 10 years ago, so, or more. So anyhow, it's been a long time, guys, and I really look forward to when that third book comes out. But I do have a different fantasy series where the fourth book is coming out in November, and they're always like 1,000 pages long. But it is exciting because it's been 2.5 years since the last book. And so now I get to, again, lose myself in that world and rediscover all the things that I've kind of forgotten because there's a lot in there.
Yeah, as it's a fantasy.
And I'm just like, I really am looking forward to it. So great point. Really great point.
Yes. But that is not what we're talking about today. Today, this is a book you can buy because we've already bought it.
Yes.
Today, we are going to be reading the second book in a series by Alyssa Braden. And that book is titled The Truth About Cads and Dukes.
And as Alyssa Braden was a new author to both Kelsey and I and to this podcast, we have her basic bio, because that's where we like to start with authors that we haven't read before. Yes. So we're going to learn a little bit about Alyssa. And it says, reading romance novels came easily to Alyssa Braden. Writing them? That took a little longer. After graduating with degrees in creative writing and history, Alyssa spent entirely too many years in, quote, real jobs, writing t-shirt copy and other people's resumes and articles about giftware displays. But that was before she woke up and started dreaming about the very unreal job of being a romance novelist. Frankly, she figures better late than never. Alyssa lives in the gorgeous Pacific Northwest, where you're constitutionally required to like the colors green and gray. Good thing that she does. Other items on the like list include cute dogs, strong coffee, and epic movies. Of course, her favorite thing of all is hearing from readers who love her characters as much as she does.
Aw, I love it.
Me too. So I like that she said the very unreal job of being a romance novelist. So perhaps she's really feeling like her job isn't a job nowadays.
But it's fair though, because there's a lot of jobs out there that like don't feel like real jobs. You've been there, but like when I started in horses and had to tell people like, oh yes, I went to college. I have a degree in political science. Oh, great. Now what do? I work with horses. I decided to just take a complete left turn and just do it this way instead.
Well, I went to college. I got a degree in horses and horses. So
yeah, you did.
That didn't feel like a real degree. But anyhow, now I'm working in technology. How did that happen?
Left turns abound, guys.
Yes.
Let life take you on those left-hand turns.
Let it, for sure. And let's pull right into our main tropes for today. Our first trope that I have written down, I feel like this is a trope. We've encountered it before, literally with this name. So I'm calling it a trope of the Plain Jane trope. Our main character's name is Jane, and she's referred to as Plain. And I think we've seen this before.
Yes.
So the other tropes are marriage to save a reputation, a prank gone wrong, and a long one here that I kind of ranted about, a man who thinks his desires are too terrifying for his delicate wife.
Yes, the uncontrollable passions that the woman's delicate sensibilities just cannot handle.
Seriously. So we're going to be dealing with that.
Yes. And our main characters today are Lady Jane Huxley and Harrison Lacey, the Duke of Blackmore.
So shall we begin?
We shall. Our story begins with a prank gone horribly wrong, as pranks are often wont to do. Lady Jane Huxley finds herself trapped and surrounded by a horde of men after she has tried to break into a London townhouse to retrieve a family heirloom for a friend. But since that so-called friend is there amongst the revelers, she knows immediately that this just isn't bad luck, and that she's utterly, thoroughly ruined. Especially in the getup that she's been told to wear, trousers and a mask with her glasses on the outside, because really, did you think you could put your glasses on the inside of a mask? She knows that this is not something she nor her sisters will be able to recover from.
The man who tricked her is Lord Colin Lacey, reprobate brother to her best friend, Victoria. He had come to her 6 weeks earlier to plead her ear. He very much wanted to get back in Victoria's good graces and rekindle a relationship with her. Though Jane thinks that this is highly unlikely, she's the type to believe the best in everyone, and so she and Colin spark up a friendship of sorts.
Now, Jane is known as plain Jane in society. Short of stature and rounder than fashion dictated, her shy nature and spectacles didn't help her make friends easily. But once someone cracked through her shell, they discovered what a lovely, smart, and interesting woman she was. Colin isn't completely heartless and starts to regret his plans almost as soon as he begins the ruse. He genuinely likes Jane, and he truly wishes to rekindle things with Victoria, and he knows that making her best friend into the butt of a bet isn't going to help. But he's terribly in debt and has no more time left before he starts paying in flesh, and so he's a bit stuck. And of course, the bet grows from a harmless small thing to something so large that he can't control it. And that's what we see in our first scene. However, Lady Jane is saved from complete ruination by Lord Collins and Victoria's other brother, the Duke of Blackmore. He offers for Jane's hand, and he threatens all those who had joined the bet so that many of them forget what happened that night. Although there are still whispers through the ton about it, it definitely helps the scandal die down.
Jane is horrified at the thought of becoming a duchess and being married to the imposing, uptight, and very handsome Blackmore. But she knows she has to go through with it so that her sisters can have success on the marriage mart. The only times that Jane and the Duke have met in the past have been disastrous, in Jane's opinion. He's happened upon less than flattering moments and has responded to her comportment with disdain. He's also a good foot taller than she is.
Victoria, however, is excited and insists that Jane will come to love Harrison once she cracks his shell and gets to know him. His icy shell is just that, a shell. But Jane is dubious. So soon the two are married and they leave to the country to adjust to married life. Along the way, they stop at an inn and have to share a bed, though Harrison insists that they will not be consummating the marriage in an inn. However, after they wake up entangled the next morning, with his hands caressing her breasts, he makes sure to get separate rooms for the remainder of the trip.
Life settles in at the estate. It is massive and beautiful, and Harrison has everything running like clockwork. It has two incredible libraries, and Jane is just entranced with them. The couple learn more about each other, and while they seem terribly mismatched, they also have a bit of a spark between them, and they are more and more curious about the other as they begin to open up. Jane appears shy, but is a delightful conversationist and very caring and compassionate once Harrison gets to know her. Harrison seems made of frozen marble at first inspection, but once he begins to thaw, Jane realizes that he is also an extremely caring individual, wrapped up in a sense of duty and traumatized from a harsh upbringing. They come to care for the other quite quickly.
However, things aren't quite right in the bedroom department at first. Encounter number one is a lackluster coupling that leaves Jane unfulfilled. It starts off promising, but Harrison insists that she let him do all the work and ends up leaving her quite frustrated. Guys, it was also very frustrating to read.
So frustrating. It's like, wait, what? What? What?
Because it's like building and building and building. Then he's like, oop, done, okay, bye. It's like, oh, okay. Well then.
Yeah. Not fair.
No, definitely not fair. Soon after, Harrison receives a letter from his best friend requesting that he and his mother and sister visit. Harrison does not want to make Jen uncomfortable since she is so shy and reticent about being a duchess already, so he decides to plan the entire visit himself and not trouble her with the meal planning or activities. Oh, this can't possibly backfire.
But before this visit begins, our couple finally ignites for encounter number two in the library. After an explosive fight over the price of chocolate, the anger morphs to lust, and they have a very satisfying time on the desk that leads to Jane's first orgasm. Harrison is, of course, embarrassed about the whole affair and shuts down afterwards, as he thinks that wives shouldn't be treated with such carelessness. Jane, on the other hand, has finally understood what her older sister is talking about with lovemaking and passion, and she realizes that her husband has been holding himself back and decides that she needs to do something about it.
However, Harrison keeps to himself for the next few days, and Jane has to resort to drastic measures. She packs herself a picnic and marches out along to the castle ruins on the grounds while Harrison is out for his ride. He sees her as she intended, and then she ropes him into a picnic. She has noticed that he watches her hands a lot, so uses that to her advantage as she eats each delicacy in the basket. She has also not worn much under her cloak, which she removes early on and stares brazenly at her husband. Harrison scrambles and tries to get Jane to understand, saying, quote, "The barest flash of agony sifted through his eyes, tugged at his brow before it was controlled. What happened before? In the library?" His chest heaved and his jaw hardened. "Yes, it was unforgivable." She crossed her arms beneath her bosom, unintentionally lifting the rounded flesh to swell further above her neckline. "According to whom?" He blinked, his eyes darting between her bosoms and her face, seemingly unable to decide where to land. "To me, it is my duty to protect you. I am your wife. Would you not say it is also your duty to provide for my every need?" Sensing a trap, he tried reasoning first. "As long as you are not harmed in doing so, yes." "Then we are in an agreement." She held her arms out to her sides, inviting him to look his fill. "Do I appear harmed to you?"
And though Harrison is still wary, Jane doesn't back down. Finally, he admits, quote, "What I want from you, it is not appropriate to demand of a wife. Is it not conceivable that you are exaggerating the delicacy of my sensibilities a bit? You don't understand." "Then I propose a solution," she said as his eyes came up to meet hers. "Tell me your desires. Describe them, one by one, and I shall inform you if anything you say causes me offense. Surely words are permissible, if only to establish where the boundaries lie." "Words are powerful, Jane. With your love of reading, you should know this better than most. We shall leave them here, at the castle, then. They will live among the moss and the ravens. I give you this promise. Whatever you say to me here shall remain ours alone. And should you desire, we need never speak of it again."
And so Harrison describes his desires. And needless to say, not one of Lady Jane's sensibilities are the least bit disturbed. So they have a very satisfying encounter number 3 amongst the ruins. Sometime soon after this, Colin arrives at Blackmoor. Harrison's threats for the Tun to forget the bets they had made at Jane's expense had worked. Except that Colin hadn't received the necessary funds to pay off his debts. So now he had thugs on his trail and had nowhere else to turn but to try his brother. Harrison insists that he won't give Colin anything, but Jane, seeing his pitiful condition, begs Harrison to reconsider. This causes a serious rift between the two, but eventually he lets Colin stay in the gamekeeper's cottage to recover before he sets off again. Their fight leads to angry sex, and they have encounter number 4 in the office.
However, all is not perfect yet with our hero and heroine, and things backslide again when Harrison's best friend Lord Dunstan and his sister and mother arrive a day later. The visit is quite dismal as Lord Dunstan's sister Lady Mary and her mother ruthlessly and slowly wear Jane down. Lady Mary was probably the woman that Harrison would have or should have married, and she knows it and is bitter about the loss of the duchy. She and Jane and Harrison also have their first real big fight during this visit, as she finds out that he has planned everything when she tries to take the reins and is told she is not needed. This makes Jane feel terrible, as though Harrison doesn't believe she's capable of even the basest responsibilities of a duchess. And with Lady Mary wearing her down, she's extra vulnerable.
So needing some decent company, she actually goes out to the cottage to chat with Colin. They've already had the opportunity to air all their issues before, and Colin has been more than honest with Jane about it all, and she appreciates his candor and misses having a friend. So she's gone out there for conversation and also to help Colin by giving him her pocket money, enough to save that he can pay off his debt and hopefully start a new life for himself in America. Colin refuses it, but Jane leaves it on the table before returning to the estate. However, Jane doesn't make it back, and instead is abducted by a man who has been watching Colin. He thinks that she is his doxy and doesn't believe she's a duchess because she simply doesn't fit the description. Eventually, she is saved from this blackguard by Harrison and Colin, and Harrison decides to give Colin the money to pay off his debts and head to America to keep his family safe.
But after this event, things go downhill for our couple again. Harrison was scared by how scared he was to lose Jane, so he gets all icy again. And during this, they are still hosting guests. Lord Dunstan and his family are still around, but now they have been joined by Lady Jane's family and Harrison's sister Victoria and her husband. And when Victoria arrives for a visit, Jane finds her backbone a bit and the two dispose of Lord Dunstan and Lady Mary.
However, try as she might to get her husband to unthaw, Harrison keeps his distance. In an epic fight between the two, he admits that if he were married to Lady Mary, he would not treat her like he is treating Jane. But of course, we readers realize that it is because he wouldn't love Lady Mary, and he does love Jane. So, sigh. Quote, he pulled away from her, shaking his head. You cannot love me. So many admonitions. She said, softly chiding. I cannot love you. I cannot leave. Well, here are yours, my darling husband. You cannot prevent it. You cannot control it. You cannot control me.
But Jane won't back down, and their tension leads to encounter number 5, where Jane insists, quote, what if instead of dousing the fire, she hooked her fingers inside his collar and tugged until his tailcoat began to peel off? We let it rage. And Jane continues to insist that he admit he loves her while she teases him into their lovemaking, which he does say, but is then terrified of what he said and feels the next day.
Before all this, Harrison had been struggling with his inward thoughts and feelings and learning more about his terrible father from one of the guests. He thought he had to contain his feelings to not fall into traps his father did. But then he realizes that by containing his feelings, he's actually falling into the trap that his father did.
And after their explosive night, Jane realizes that she loves him too much to be this close to him while he's going through all of this mental
stuff.
His man drama, yes. So she decides to go stay with Victoria for a while. So she leaves the next day after explaining this to Harrison quite clearly.
And the moment Jane leaves, Harrison realizes he's made a huge mistake. Even the distance of a few miles apart is simply too great, and he knows he needs to have her back. So he hops on his horse and gallops to catch the carriage and makes a beautiful and heartfelt apology, an explanation that sends Jane tumbling into his arms. And after a few ups and downs, our characters are now open and honest with each other and ready to live blissfully, happily ever after together. We do get encounter number 6 after their reunion, just FYI.
And then we get a short epilogue, which focuses on a character that I did not mention in the synopsis. we're seeing it from her point of view. But we learn that the Duke and Duchess are extremely happy and many children are expected from their union if their happiness has anything to show for it. So, the end.
The end. Wonderful. Yay.
So, I want to talk more about this book that we read from a brand new author to both of us, a new book for both of us, a new author for both of us. But first, shall we adjourn to the parlor?
We shall.
So we have a pretty quick parlor today. We just wanted to remind you guys where you can find us on social media and around the web. We're on Instagram and Twitter at T as in Tom, N as in Nancy Strumpets, Facebook / the same thing, and Pinterest / the same thing, and YouTube by searching our name. And we have a website. It's romancepod.com. So there you can find all sorts of stuff, blog posts, our synopsis is written out, and information about us. So we recommend you head on over there and take a look.
While you're there, you can also sign up for our email notifications. We don't send a lot of them, so don't worry about that. You can just get updates on what we plan for the podcast each month.
Absolutely. And finally, we do have a request for you guys. If you are enjoying what you're hearing, we would love it so much if you would leave us a review. Reviews really help us get found, and they also bring a really big smile to our face. We love to hear what you guys think, and we love to hear that we're being heard, because sometimes it feels like we're shouting out into the great big void. So we love hearing from you guys in any respect. And also if you like what you're hearing, tell a friend, spread the word. We really appreciate it.
Hi, Hi, I'm Elle Penelope, and I'm an author of epic fantasy and paranormal romance, and also the host of My Imaginary Friends, which is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. On my show, you'll get a weekly look behind the scenes of an author navigating the publishing world, as well as thoughts and tips on creativity, inspiration, writing routines, and more. So if you're an established or an aspiring writer, or a reader who always wanted a peek into an author's life, you can find me at myimaginaryfriendsshow.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now let's talk about this book.
Let's talk about it. So, Kelsey, you want to give your general thoughts first?
Okay, my general thoughts were, I was grumpy at the beginning of this book.
Really?
I really liked the writing. It wasn't that.
Me too.
I did have a hard time with the characters. Like, they, like, I didn't dislike them, but I wasn't, like, I didn't fall in love with them immediately.
Yes, I agree.
And it's just, like, I thought Harrison was almost too pompous. Like, there was no, because usually when you get a pompous, you see, like, a flicker in the eye, you know, there's something about them. But he really, like, even in his inward thoughts, like, he wasn't very likable. He was, like, very pompous and assy, even when it was, like, his point of view. And Jane, I thought she was great, and I totally understand her shyness. But it's so funny because you kind of see Colin kind of, like, wooing her and setting her up for this eventual, like, ruination moment. And the whole time she's kind of skeptical of him, but then goes along with it. Like, she teases him and is like, yeah, you're not going to be able to charm me like that. But kind of still goes along with him, even though she's skeptical. So I'm just like, how did you put your foot? Like, I just never saw the moment where she was so much like, this is my good friend that I will do this for. And I don't know if it's just because she had so few friends that even to say he was kind of a friend was like a big deal for her. But
yeah,
I don't know. I didn't quite get how, I just didn't see how she quite got to that moment. That being said, as the book progressed, I got more and more interested in the characters, and I got good feelings from the both of them. And, like, Harrison I liked quite a bit more at the end than I did at the beginning. And Jane also.
Absolutely. I think this is really funny because I felt almost the opposite way about the book. I really liked it from the beginning, and I slowly fell off the bandwagon as I went. I also completely agree. I loved the writing. I thought the writing was great.
Writing was great.
And so I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to read more from this author. Like, absolutely. I think there was just maybe a little bit of a disconnect with some of the character stuff. I think you're right on the right track there, where Harrison was a little too stoic and too unlikable in the beginning. Which you have to have that flash of something. Like, of course we know he's going to be redeemable, you know, by the end if it's a good book. But there has to be that something that – and it can't just be word of mouth. Like, just because Victoria's like, no, my brother's really a softie, like, you know.
Yeah, no, she says that and you're like, what do you mean? Like, there's no way.
There's no way, Victoria. There's literally nothing to have proven that. But yeah. I really dislike in TV shows, movies, books, when you, like, start with a scene and then you go back in time. I'm always like, oh, man.
Oh, I hate that. But, that's the worst.
But she did that here and I didn't hate it.
I agree with that. Actually, when it did that and then it was, like, 6 weeks early, I was like, oh, God. I was like, we're doing this. And then it, like, actually went pretty quickly.
Yeah, it went pretty quickly.
Very quickly. And they even kind of like – and then it kind of got to the point and she didn't rehash the point of view of the whole scene. She just kind of was like, and now we're after that. Like, now we're ruined.
Well, and you had to be like, how did she do this absolutely outrageous thing? You had to have information. And so it was riveting to me from the beginning. Where I think – I really got kind of like meh about things. One is a small comment, which is that every chapter was preceded by, you know, a snippet of italicized text.
Those were so unnecessary.
There was never not one that was necessary.
No,
They were all from the person whose point of view was in the epilogue. I read probably a few of them and then I just skimmed them. I was like, this is not helpful. This does not advance the story. I cannot believe an editor let this get through.
I tried to see, like, if there was, like, small little nugget that, like, played out in the chapter, and it never did. Like, never once did that little nugget, like, go into the chapter. They were completely superfluous. And they also talked, like, a lot of it was, like, this character we really, like, I'm assuming we met her more in book one.
Probably.
This is the second book, and I'm sure we met her more in book one. And she does, she is talked about in book two, but you don't actually get to know her, but you have all these snippets that she says, and she's, like, and it's almost like a Whistledown character.
Yep.
Or a meant little bit, to be. Yeah. Or like,
I
or
think
a
it's
lady,
like a Danbury.
Or a Lady Danbury. Yeah, she's meant to be like a Lady Danbury. But you don't really get any of her essence. And then it's all these quotes. And a lot of them are like to her son, who I found out later does have a book later in the series. Just so you know.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's a great book. And I liked her character. She was funny when she was in scenes. And the epilogue is from her point of view. And it's delightful. It's so cute. I mean, it's very cute. However, I just, like, I really, I've talked about this before with some of Julia Quinn's books where I was like, I don't think it needed, like, I understand she had Whistledown for a long time in the beginning. And that was always great. But then she, like, did something in some of the books that really did not. Like, there was at least one book that I was like, she just didn't need this thing here.
I just was thinking about the progression of that, because by the time we get to Gregory's book, it's literally just, like, almost like a naming of the chapter. But it's like, in which our heroine finds out some more interesting information.
Yeah.
But that was Julia, like, Quinn, I see what you did there.
But that was so much better. It was edited down from like three books before it, where it was like, this just is so unnecessary. So anyhow, I didn't like that because, again, I just felt like it was a thing that should have been edited because it didn't add to the story. And that just kind of, like, irks me. Personal pet peeve, right? The thing that also just, like, really got me irritated as I read the book was the plain Jane thing. Like,
oh,
we
God,
get
it. Got,
we,
I was over it.
I was super over it. I was like, we get it that she's plain. But here's the thing. Anytime that you have a character who is described at the beginning as plain or, you know, not what society wants, or fat or chubby or rotund or too skinny or too busty or too anything, right? Like, if they're described as not the perfect English rose at the beginning, there has to be something that by the end, they have conquered that opinion of themselves at the very least. And that was never addressed with Jane.
No. And that was the thing is, like, and it was so interesting because for me, Jane, and this is where I got irritated with that character as well, was that it never quite, it was always this flip-flop. Like, she'd get stronger and, like, start to, like, be the strong person. And then, like, the next table, and then the next scene would, someone would say something so innocuous or, like, even just, like, maybe a tad mean. And instead of relying on all the things she had just done, she, like, reverted back to, like,
She didn't kick. She didn't do anything to Lady Mary and her mother until Victoria was there. And Victoria basically does it for her.
Oh, yeah. And then even still, it's like, and then the two of them are gone. And then even Jane's, like, still, like, oh, woe is me. Like, you know, I'm still the plain Jane. It's like, no, but you show up, and she shows all these super strong moments. When she walks away from the Duke, you know, in the end, like, that's a super strong moment. But it's almost undone 2 seconds later by her own inner thoughts. And she has all these super strong moments and these witty moments. And then it's just, like, undoes so easily. And I get maybe the whole idea is, like, you can't overcome, like, you know, if it's been your whole life, like, I get not overcoming it quite so easily, but it just went on too long to the point where there was never, like, she never became the strong woman you know she was.
Yeah. And it wasn't, like, it wasn't just Jane. It was everyone else around her, too, that didn't see her as the butterfly instead of the caterpillar, right?
Yeah.
And so, he doth protest too much. Like, there was a lot of him, the Harrison, kind of being like, well, but she's plain and, oh, she has a small, like, a nose that her spectacles barely fit on and, like, she's constantly pushing them up and yet somehow I'm attracted to that. And it was always in the writing the yet somehow I'm attracted to that, you know? It wasn't that he realized, like, he then sees that as an endearing thing. It was always a statement. And so I think that was the disconnect. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rather than, because we've seen great examples of this in other books.
Mm-hmm. Well, and at the end, then when the lady we mentioned, the Danbury type character, Willingham.
I don't remember.
Witting something. It starts with a W, guys. She's Lady W. We'll go with that. she's like, oh, well, I always knew Jane wasn't going to amount to much. Like, she's just so plain. And then he's all mad at her. And he's like, no, she is beautiful. And she is strong. And she's a good duchess. And it's just like,
it's too late.
Yeah, it's like, it's... well, she already walked out of your life, buddy. Like.
Well, and also the fact that Lady W, who is another, like, actually doesn't believe those things about her. Like, actually still believes, again, at the end, that Jane is just nothing.
The only moment I really liked was there was that moment where she's, like, hosting this ball last minute and threw it all together in 3 days. And her mom comes down to be like, oh, do you need help with anything? And no, Jane's like, no, you're a guest. Like, go enjoy yourself. And her mom's like, the one moment I saw was like, I am so proud of you. Like, mm-hmm. that was like my one moment where I was really happy. But it still didn't transform Jane into this strong person. It's not like, you know, suddenly her mom was like, I'm so proud of you. You become the woman I knew you could be. Like, this is what
her
I've been pushing.
Her mom did say that.
Yeah. Her mom said, you've become the woman I knew you were meant to be. Like, I knew this could be you. I needed you to believe it, too. And I'm so proud of you. And that was a conversation they had. And yet, still, Jane, like, gets out of the ball and is like, meh.
Yeah. It was just, again, like, I just wanted a little bit more from her. Because, again, like you said, there was so much strength that happened in moments. But then it just wasn't supported by everything around her. Which is, like, when a character exudes strength and confidence, I think is the better word, right? When they exude confidence, people see them differently. And that's where I thought, like, it's not like she has to all of a sudden be beautiful, right? But, like, she has to feel good about herself. And I just never felt like she really had that full confident, you know, coming out. Now, I'm not saying she has to all of a sudden be the outgoing duchess, you know, because I feel like she could still be very shy and only let a few people into her circle and be a little bit more reserved, but still confident, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And where I think that there's a book that I think did the opposite of this and made the shy person way too confident, way too fast, and a duchess.
Mm-hmm.
And never had any backslides. Like, she just all of a sudden decided she was confident and she went and, like, it was fine. It's the new spoilers here, I guess. Well, it's not a spoiler, but this is my opinion on the new Eloisa James book with Viola. She just is very confident all of a sudden and becomes a duchess and gets over her debilitating shyness very quickly. So that being said, I just want to be clear that that's not what I was looking for. I wasn't looking for her to, like, emerge and be like, I am Duchess now. Hear me roar. But I just wanted her to be happy and confident. And she was sexually confident.
Yeah. She was very happy with. Like, that was good.
But yeah, I just felt like the book didn't support that. It just didn't. It kept having moments where it was like, she's a plane, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, we're on page 300. How are we still here?
Yeah.
No. So.
Yeah. No, there's a lot. And I will say, too, like, plot-wise, it was a bit, like, it had a bit of moving parts going. Like, it was a bit convoluted. But at the same time, too, she kind of drew it together and, like, you know, ended things where they, like, needed to end. And she didn't elaborate. And then it actually got to the point where at the end, I was like, what the hell happened to Colin?
Yeah.
Which is okay, though, because now I find out that's the next book. But still, it was like, I literally got to the end and I was like, and then no one's worried we haven't heard from Colin yet.
Well, who, let's be honest, is pretty irredeemable. Like, he had some bad stuff happen to
even
him.
I think for me, the redeemable quality in Colin came from the fact that he did not think he was redeemable. And I think that's where his redemption is going to come from, because he truly is like, I've done some terrible things. And honestly, like, I regret them. And I had, like, I would do them over. But I get myself into these situations. He's like, when I went out to ruin you, Jane, like, I didn't like it from the beginning. And yet I was desperate. And I honestly, my desperation and my selfishness overruled the fact that I was uncomfortable with it. I mean, I'll be honest. Like,
I enjoyed reading the character. I thought he was fun to read. But when you find out that the reason that Harrison wants nothing to do with him anymore is the fact that Colin knocked up Victoria's would have been sister-in-law and then wanted nothing to do with her. And she was a lady and she ended up committing suicide. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was her older brother thought that Harrison had been the one to do this. And so they fought a duel and he killed the Viscount. So the middle brother then became the Viscount. He then decided to get revenge by, you know, seducing the sister. Yeah. And they end up getting married. So, and falling in love.
And falling in love.
Which I do want to read that book. That's book one. But
I want to read it too. Because they actually end up, like, because even Harrison, the guy who killed the brother, like, you see the interaction with the now brother-in-law. And it's actually, like, a good interaction. It's like, oh, okay. Interesting.
Because Harrison wasn't really at fault here, you know? Like,
no. He didn't know why the other guy was calling him out. He just was being called out. And he's like, I didn't do it. And he didn't understand all the things that happened with it. But
for them to really – for Victoria and Harrison and Colin to be a happy family and, like, actually, like, have commingling of families, I just see that as very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. Maybe not Harrison and Colin, but Victoria – and Colin, for sure, because her husband – anyhow.
Anyway.
It's very sad. Maybe we're missing some information from book one. And I just felt like, how is Colin – I mean, I definitely want to read his book, but, like, how
– I know, but that's
what
I mean.
He has to grow and get past the trauma and everything, but
– But I think the first step in his redemption comes from the fact that he admits that he's a horrible person and he recognizes that.
Yeah, he did recognize it. That's so true. All right, so we're talking about not one of our main characters. How about we talk about our main characters?
Yes, I think we've talked a lot about Jane, and we've given a lot of opinions on Jane. And so if we're going to do our heroine rating, do we have anything else to add? I feel like we've kind of talked a bit.
No, I think we got it. I'm ready to rate.
Problems with Jane. Okay, Zoe, right away.
I'm going to give her a 6.
Okay.
I wouldn't take her or leave her. There were things about her I liked, but there was a lot I found lacking.
Okay. I am a little bit higher than you. I'm going to say, like, 7. That's kind of where I want to be. Like, because I think that – I don't think she's great. I did have the issues with the Plain Jane. I was over it by the end of it. But
– But again, it wasn't only her.
No. Again, yeah, it wasn't only her. And – her, like, when she was that strong person, like, I really liked that character. And
me
so
too.
That's what I'm going to say. When she was strong, I really liked her. The other parts I could do without. So that's why I'm going to say a 7, because when she was strong, she was strong.
I don't disagree. Okay. So how about Harrison? We've already talked a little bit about him. We've said that he was kind of icy and very one note in the beginning, but then he opens up and you find about his past trauma and why he is the way he is. And hey, and he comes around in a reasonable amount of time, I think.
Yes, I think that. And I think that Harrison, a lot of his mistakes, like Jane saw it as he didn't think, once again, where she's over, like, pulling it off. Like, he was like, she's really shy. These people are visiting. Like, I'll do her a favor. And, like, because I'm sure she doesn't want to necessarily, like, I'm trying to give her a break because I know it's going to be stressful for her to just, like, be in company for so much. Like, I want to give her, like, less, like, I want to give her a break about something. So, like, it came from a good place when he took over the planning of the visit. But it went sideways very quickly. Of course it did. But I think that there was cute moments later on. I think he definitely got more. He was definitely more redeemed by the end of it for me. Like at the end of it, I definitely liked him. But I'm still going to give him a 7 because I really didn't like him at the beginning.
Oh, well, see, I just, again, thought he was fine kind of all over. I thought that he backslid a little bit too much after Jane was very open and honest with him and just like, you're fine. I give him a 6. Again, okay. I think he's better than take it or leave it. I just don't think he just doesn't do it for me.
That's fair. And I think that's totally fair. Like, I'm a little bit higher, but yeah, I think that I liked the Harrison that shone through at the end, but you're right. He did backside quite a bit. I'm still going to stick with 7, though.
So, fair enough.
There we go.
So right. Do you have a favorite quote from this book?
Mine, I'm going to give mine a favorite one. And this was a good one. This was the first thing I highlighted. And this was after they had been, they literally had just gotten married. And then she turns to him and says something, like, as they're walking down. She's like, well, let's get on with it, you know? And so the quote is, and that's when he knew. It was more than the relief of removing himself from the husband hunt. It was her, Jane. She was quite possibly the only woman who had ever challenged him so directly. She did not treat him like a duke. She treated him like a man, and one who vexed her as much as she did him.
Yes. I mean, they did have chemistry, and they had their moments. Mm-hmm. It was really great. I liked this quote from even earlier when they end up dancing together at a ball, despite the fact that she didn't want, she had already refused him, but her mother came at the wrong moment. And so they end up dancing. Mm-hmm. And she says to him, and he is basically like kind of belittling her for not treating him as though his rank, as his rank should respect. Mm-hmm. But she's just like over his pompous behavior. And mm-hmm. for whatever reason, the anger of that kind of breaks through her shyness, and she's able to kind of like speak her mind to him. So she mm-hmm. says, "Perhaps you are right, Your Grace," she said quietly. "Perhaps I do not have the sense to tell a duke from a dray horse, but such a thing might prove easier if the former did not so perfectly resemble the latter's backside."
Oh, that was such a good one. I loved that one. Yeah. And he's like, what? I loved that one. That was
yeah,
a good
that's
one.
Why he's even more intrigued with her as time goes mm-hmm. on.
Exactly.
So,
all right. Steaminess rating. I thought it had some good chemistry. Like,
I thought it, okay, so I thought it was good chemistry. I thought it got like very steamy, but then it was just like the first three encounters, I think, were interesting because like the first one left you wanting, right? You were like,
yes. Ah!
And then the second one was like hot and steamy. And then the third one, she's like, I'm not taking this no more. We're at the castle ruins.
Yeah.
And then it was just like angry sex after that, you know, like, and then makeup like, sex.
Mm-hmm. Or and like, just, yeah. And she's like, I need to trick him into opening up more and like, you know, like, I'm going to, yeah.
The I love you, pushing him to say I love you during sex. She, like, really pushed. I didn't like that particularly. So it got less steamy as the book went on and felt like it was, like, almost superfluous sex scenes to me. Mm-hmm. So I was, I think the tea was a little cold.
I was gonna say a good cup of tea that got cold too quickly.
Yes, that is the perfect way to describe it. Mm-hmm. And we had six encounters. I may have missed one. I think it's six too, but if there was like one time where she talked about having sex, but there was nothing explicit. So I didn't count that one. Anyhow, mm-hmm. the point is, a cup of tea that cooled down way too quickly.
Agreed.
So feminist recap. So this is where I think a lot of my comments from before really come in, because there were some feminist moments in this book, like really good ones.
Yeah,
like her
really good ones. Really good supportive from sister, ruins. Mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the castle ruins, and when she's like, "Why don't you tell me?" And if I'm, you know, if I am, upset
I love that
by
scene.
And then also like what she says at the end of that, where she says like, "And it, if we never want to speak of it again, like basically this is a safe space and it will mm-hmm. only live here and it will only be between me and you." And the way she said that was like so powerful and, you know, so believable and so safe. But I just felt like self-esteem stuff just totally
counterbalanced
that.
Self-esteem stuff, and also like, yes, guys said things to her too, but then the majority of the book at the end was like, you know, it was other women tearing her down. It was like Lady Mary and her mother just like basically being the rudest house guests on the face of the planet.
Yeah.
Because they're like, this should have been ours. And it's like, well, then fuck off then. Like,
yeah. So I it's hard for me to call this one an offender, but I don't feel like it's a supporter or it's neutral, because I think that if you're someone who reads this book who either has a similar figure to the way that our heroine mm-hmm. is described and feels some insecurities, or mm-hmm. you're a normal person who has insecurities about your body and you've had similar situations happen in your life, like, you're not going to feel empowered at the end of it.
No.
You know, you're not going to, you're just not. And so that's why I find this one is like a little bit encroaching on offender to me, because I feel like it's not, you're not going to feel great at the end of it about yourself if you have some vulnerabilities too. And so that's where I really believe that this author set out to write a feminist book. I just think that.
Oh, I think so too. I think the moments that were feminist were very feminist. And I was like, hear, hear. Like, I really loved those. But I don't think that there was enough of them to outweigh the negativity that we also saw.
Yeah, and this was written, I think, in 2015, unless it was, unless that's a different edition, which if that's the case, 2015 is pretty current. You know what I mean? So I just feel like it could, I think she just missed the mark and missed that little bit of a confidence part for our main character that I think could have made this way more stunning than
I think so too.
It was.
Agreed. But overall, the book was a 7.
I disagree. Okay. For me, the book was a 6. I mean, but that really goes with all of
that
our ratings.
That goes with everything we've said. You know, like, I think for me, like, I really enjoyed the writing and I really enjoyed the plot. And, you know, the stuff I talked about aside, like, for me, there was more good elements to tip it up to 7 for me than keep it down at a 6. Like, and I think part of my viewing of that is that maybe not the fact that, like, I was necessarily sold on this book, but, like, did it intrigue me to read more of the series? Absolutely. So.
Oh, me too. I am for sure going to be reading more of these books. I'm really glad that our listeners, you know, I brought her into our viewpoint. How did we miss
her? Listeners, we listen to you.
We do. Absolutely. And we're just, like, I also enjoyed reading this book. Yes, I had some criticisms of it, but, like, I can there's still, like, serious quality here that, you know, you can't – it's still undeniable even if when you're picking it apart, you have some qualms. So
no, this is a book I definitely found myself, like, getting in – I got into it and I was able to read it fairly quickly and, like, it wasn't a chore to read it.
No, it was fun. And like I said, I do want to find out about Colin, and I do want to find out about Victoria, and I do want to find out about all the other people we haven't yet met. So she did her work.
Yes, she did.
So as much fun as we had talking about this book, we're at that point where we talk about what we're doing next week.
Yes, and next week we are going to be talking with co-owner of LA famous bookstore, The Ripped Bodice, Bea Koch, all about her new book, Mad and Bad, Real Heroines of the Regency.
If there was a book that was more perfect to talk about on our podcast, I don't know what is.
I don't think there is a more perfect one, except for, you know, all the other Regency romances we've already read.
Well, yes, but I mean, so this one is talking about real Regency figures, and I'm just excited to dive in, talk to her about that. We'll talk to her about other things. And if you guys have any questions you would like us to ask her, go ahead and get in contact with us through our email. Our email is romancepod@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram and send us a message, because this episode will come out on Thursday. And there is a few days between that and when we're actually sitting down and talking with her. So there is time if you guys have some questions, things you want to know about The Ripped Bodice or about her new book or about her. So please send those in to us if you guys have anything you want to learn about. So thank you all again for tuning in and listening. If you haven't subscribed to us yet, but you're listening to us, we recommend you do subscribe on your favorite podcast app of choice, or your favorite podcast app in general. I don't know what the difference of that might be. We just appreciate it. So again, thanks for listening, and join us next time as we speak with Bea Koch about Mad and Bad, Real Heroines of the Regency.
And may all your ever afters end happily.
Tea and Strumpets is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts you'll love at frolic.media/podcasts.